So we are in the middle of chapter 44, and we just finished this idea of voicing our intentions arouses our intentions, and they fan our emotions. When we speak about the ideas that we were meditating upon, that Hashem is our true father, and that we would do anything like a son who would give up his life in order to free his parents from captivity, speaking it out fans our emotions. And it really is an incredible idea. Not only does speaking augment our emotions, speaking actually enhances intellectual clarity. And that's what we were discussing here before class. What we got up to until now was we were speaking about voicing our emotional intentions so we actually feel it. We were getting in touch with a space within ourselves where we know that we have this aspect like Moshe. Just like Hashem is his father, and he is like that child who desires and strives after, his parents more than his own self. He cares about them more than he cares about his own self. He'll give up his life to free them from captivity. And we have that within ourselves. We have that glow of Moshe within ourselves. We share the same father as Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem is Moshe's father. Hashem is our father. How do we access that deep space within ourselves? We talk about it. We articulate it. And speaking about our emotions brings us to feel our emotions. And then we came to this question that we had that, yes, we do have this deep feeling within ourselves. But on our regular everyday behavior, our regular everyday mode, we're not accessing that. We're not feeling that. And then we're creating the emotion by speaking about the emotion. So is that real or is that artificial? And the truth is, it is artificial, or it is possibly artificial, but it's real because the emotion that it's based on is absolutely authentic. That was the idea that we left off with last time. And there's an incredible thought about how articulating our thoughts brings intellectual clarity. The Midrash says like this, Amar Rav Acha. Rav Acha says, Min ha'alekim ata lamed. You learn from Hashem. Kesheb bikesh loymar Torah li Yisrael. When he wanted to say the Torah to the Jewish people, Amara arba pe'amim beinoy levein atzmai. Ad shalai amara li Yisrael. He said it to himself. Hashem said the Torah to himself four times before he said it to the Jewish people. And the Midrash brings a supporting verse, Shene'emar, like it says, Azra'a v'yisapra, hechina v'gam chakara, v'ahar kach v'yaymer la'adam. This is from Iyov. First, then he saw it, and he told the story, he prepared it, and he investigated it, and only afterwards did he say it to man. And similarly, before Hashem gave the Torah to the Jewish people, what does the Torah say? V'chein, v'yedaber elekim es kol hadvarim ha'ela. And Hashem spoke all these words saying, v'ahar kach, and afterwards does the Torah say, lemor, to say it to the Jewish people. So Hashem, as it were, repeats the Torah to himself four times before he says it to the Jewish people. The Midrash has something very fascinating. The Midrash says like this. There's a story about Rabbi Akiva. Maisa Rabbi Akiva, Shikrai HaChazen Barabim L'Krais B'Sefer Torah B'Tzibur. It's related that the Chazen, the attendant, okay? So it's related that the attendant once called upon Rabbi Akiva to read the Torah before the congregation, but he was unwilling to assent. His student said to him, Rabbeinu, loy kach limadtanu? Didn't you teach us this? Ki chayecha v'arech yamecha? That it is your life and the length of your days? Why did you refuse to assent? Amar lahem. He said to them, ha'avaida, it's like a way of swearing, by the temple service. Loy nimnati l'kreis, ela al shalai disidarti isa parsha shnaim shoshapamim. I refuse to read the portion only because I have not reviewed the chapter two or three times. She'ein ash adam rashai loymar divrei Torah lefnei hatzibur ad sheyifshait oisei shnayim shloisha pa'amim beinai levein atzmai. And no one is permitted to recite the words of Torah until he has reviewed them two or three times by himself. And then he says with the previous midrash, Shekein Masina B'Kadosh Baruch Hu, this is what we find with Hashem. Shehu Naisin Mayin Lashon L'Chol HaBriyos, he is the one who gives the power to respond to all his creatures. V'Hatayra Gluya L'Fan of K'Kaychav Echad, and the Torah is as clear to him as a single star. U'Chsheba L'Itein Aisa L'Yisrael, and when he came to give it to the Jewish people, K'siv Bay, it is written about him, Azra'a, then he saw Vayasapra, and he told the story. Hachina, he prepared it, Vagam Hakara, and he also investigated it. Va'acharechein, and only afterwards, Vayaymer la'adam, did he say to man. And he says again, what the Midrash says, Vachin ksiv, Vayadabra el kim es kol advar ma'ela, Beinoy levein asmai. Hashem spoke all these words to himself. Va'acharechein lamer, and only afterwards to say. And the Alter Rebbe in a mimer takes these four stages and he relates them to the four letters of Hashem's name. And the Rebbe in a mimer explains that this is the way a teacher needs to prepare class. It's these four stages. Stage one is Ra'ah. First, he saw it. This is the Yud. This is the letter of Chachma. The teacher has to have the whole idea in front of him, to himself. He has to see it clear as a picture. And then, Vayasapra, he needs to tell the story to himself. He needs to work out the details. And that's the letter Hey, Bina. And then there's the letter Vav, the world of emotions, entering into the world of somebody else, drawing it down. Hechina, he prepared it. You need to think, who am I saying this to? How are they going to relate to this idea? Vigam Chakara, and he also investigated it. Once he brought it down into his student's world, then he fleshed out the ideas so they got it all. That is the process of teaching, and that is the process of understanding an intellectual idea. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov speaks about this, and he says that people praise people who get up there, great Torah scholars, and just on the fly, spontaneously come up with brilliant new ideas. He said, that's not such a great thing. That's not a great praise. Anybody can do that if they can connect themselves to Hashem. But you have to learn from Hashem. What does Hashem do? Hashem reviews it first to himself. And then he says it to others. So this idea of speaking things out, here we're learning in class, it's not about the intellectual working out the idea, we're learning about emotionally relating to it. We're talking about something that seems so distant from us. We know we have it. And we truly know we have it. I have never yet met a woman who was exposed to these ideas and said, you know what, it's not true. She doesn't love Hashem in her deepest space. And I'm talking about women from all backgrounds in life. And if anybody wants to challenge me, I'm open for it, okay? To really, really be honest with yourself, close your eyes for a second and think. At my deepest space, I'm truly, truly one with Hashem. I love Him. All I want to do is be united with Him. And if you think about it, all of life, we seek unity. That's what people are seeking for, unity. Why are they seeking unity and in different forms? Because their truest desire is unity with Hashem. But we have a problem. It's so hidden within us. It takes a tremendous amount of effort to access it. What are we going to do about it? You know what we're going to do? First, we're going to meditate. We're really going to think about this thought that Hashem is our Father. And then we're going to verbally articulate the things that we thought about. Hashem is my true Father. I love Him. I'll do anything to make Him happy. When we say those kind of things, it fans the emotions in our heart and we start to feel it. And then because we want to be authentic, and especially in today's day and age, everybody wants to be authentic because I need to be authentic. So 1 second, I am feeling emotions. I'm feeling it in my heart, but I don't know if it's real. And that bugs me. What if it's not real? I am artificially manufacturing these emotions. And the Alter Rebbe said, Layachash, don't worry about it. I'll tell you why you shouldn't worry about it, because it's your truest self. If we have artificially manufactured something that was foreign to us, then we need to worry about it. Maybe I'm being a hypocrite. But if we have artificially manufactured an expression of our deepest self, we don't have to worry about it, because we are accessing a space within ourselves and letting it find expression, even if at the moment it doesn't necessarily feel like this is our most authentic self. And there's this great analogy of the painted elephants. So in Africa, they were exporting elephants in order to sell them. This is just an analogy. It's not a true story. And then they discovered brown elephants, and they realized that brown elephants are more desirable and they bring in a higher price. So they started to charge more money for the brown elephants. And when the border patrol noticed that, they were like, they're making more money off the brown elephants. We got to charge more taxes for the brown elephants. And people didn't want to pay more taxes. So they started to paint the brown elephants gray. So this way, they come through and they only have to pay the gray elephant tax. And once the Border Patrol got wind of that, they started to hose elephants as they were passing the border to make sure that they're really gray. Now, one elephant came by, a big, beautiful gray elephant, and they started to hose the elephant down. And what do you know? It's brown. But as the hose continues, the elephant starts turning gray again. And they're like, hey, what happened? And the guy said, listen, you know, I had a gray elephant. I wanted to sell it for the price of a brown elephant, so I painted my elephant brown. And then I realized, you know, that's really not so nice. I don't want to do that. I want to be an honest person. But I didn't think the paint could wash off. So I repainted the elephant gray. And once you guys started to hose down the elephant, it looked like it was brown, but you kept the hose on long enough, and you realized that all along it really was a gray elephant. And that's us. We really, at our deepest felt space, we're truly one with Hashem. And we come down to this world and we're painted brown, brown elephant. Suddenly it's like, no, love Hashem? I love pizza. I want a Tesla. I love all kinds of crazy things. That's the most, I want to be famous. That's the things that I want. You say, one second. Stop for a minute. And maybe all these desires are pulling you in every which direction, but think for a moment. Who am I really? And you start studying Tanya and you realize I am someone who's truly connected with Hashem. I'm not feeling it right now, so I'm going to awaken my intentions by verbalizing them, by articulating them. Say, okay, I'm experiencing these emotions, but are they real? Yes. You just, in between, you painted the brown. And now you can't experience the gray, so you're repainting the gray. But if you hose the elephant down, you realize that's who it was all along. You know, we're feeling like this is a pseudo emotion, but that's really who we were all along. And that's what the Alter Rebbe just told us right now. Don't worry, because that's who you were all along. Okay, so we're on page 6. And the words that we finished with last time were exactly these words. La yachosh me'achar shehu emes la'amitai mitzad atzmai b'vchinas ahav mesuteras. He need not be concerned because it is intrinsically the absolute truth, even without his own spiritual service, by virtue of the hidden love which his soul possesses for Hashem. So if we anyway possess this love for Hashem, why are we working so hard to experience it? It's me. So I'm going to start doing all these exercises so I can experience it. And Alter Rebbe says, yes, there's a very great benefit to experiencing it. Rak shetai elas yitzi asa el hagiloi kedei lahavia lidei maisa. But the benefit derived from the spiritual service through which he effects its emergence into the open is that he should translate it into action. And when his love is in a state of concealment, it cannot affect his actions. So yes, we have it. And not only do we have it, it is our deepest core self. Even though it's our deepest core self, it doesn't play out into our everyday life. We see plenty of Jewish people who are not in touch with that space, and so they don't act in line with that space. You know, Stephen Covey has something really great about the difference between something that's urgent and important. So there's a lot of things that are important, but because they're not urgent, people don't attend to them. What's urgent? Some things are very urgent and they're not important at all, like a phone ringing while you're in the middle of a really important conversation with somebody who's present. But you feel the urgency of the phone. Why? It's just getting to you. It's urgent. Maybe urgent, but it's not important. On the other hand, there are things that are very important, but we don't feel the urgency of it. What's important? Our core self, our deepest self is important. Our love for Hashem is important. But unless we're experiencing the emotions of it, we're not experiencing the urgency of it. It's not getting us to act in line with our deepest self. So by us calling up our emotions, it allows us to experience the urgency of our love for Hashem. And it gets us to attach to Him. It gets us to do things for Him. It gets us to align our everyday behavioral self with our deep core self as manifestations of the divine will. When we study Torah, when we do a mitzvah, We become the manifestation of Hashem's will in this world. And when we realize that we have a deep love for Hashem and we connect to it by feeling it, by calling it into actual emotion, we now are able to align our regular everyday behavioral self with our deepest core self. Shehu Esek HaTorah VaHaMitzvot. This means being occupied with the Torah and the mitzvot. Shalaymid umekayim al yidei zeh kidei la'asais nachas ruach lefanav yisbarech kavein ha'aveit es aviv. Which he studies and performs as a result of it, meaning as a result of revealing this love with the intention of causing gratification to Hashem, like a son serving his father, who does so in order to cause him gratification. So this gives us some clarity as to why we would want to access this kind of love. Because any kind of love is going to get us to study Torah and do a mitzvah. Even if we experience love on a very basic level, love on a very basic level impels us to want to connect. What's the way to connect to Hashem? We realize we want to connect to Him. We've come to that realization. It wasn't this kind of meditation of, I am a son who strives after his father. I am a child who strives after his father and mother. That wasn't the level. It's just the basic level. I realize I love Hashem. At that space, we want to connect. Love impels us to connect, right? If you love someone, you want to do something, you want to have some type of connection or relationship. How do we connect with Hashem? We know how to connect with other people, but to connect with Hashem, it's basically impossible. We're finite. Hashem is infinite. In order to bridge that gap from the finite to the infinite, it takes the infinite one to bridge the gap. We can't. And he does. He throws us a rope. Torah and mitzvahs. The Zohar says that the 248 commandments are the 248 limbs of the king. What are our limbs? Our limbs are manifestation of our life force. What are Hashem's limbs? Hashem's limbs are the mitzvot. They are the manifestation of Hashem in this world. How do we hug Hashem? We grab his limbs. We do a mitzvah. That's how we hug him. How do we get close to Hashem? True unity is achieved with Hashem by studying his Torah. Hashem has invested his own self into the Torah. Like we learned, the word Anochi, the first word of the Ten Commandments, stands for Ana Nafshi Kesavis Yehavis, which means I myself have written it and given it, but it literally means I have taken my soul, inscribed it, and given it to you by giving the Torah. So when we study Torah, learning is like eating, right? You are what you eat. You also are what you know. What you know literally becomes part of your mind. It becomes you. If what you know is the Torah, that means what you know is Hashem. It's an intimate experience with Hashem where he's literally fused with our mind. So any level of love, even the very basic level of I just want to connect, is going to get us to do Torah and mitzvahs. What is the benefit of having this kind of love, the love of a son who wants nothing for himself, all he wants to do is to bring Hashem pleasure? Well, it gets us to keep the mitzvahs on a much higher level. It gets us to study Torah on a much higher level. There's no agenda of self here. I'm doing this only for Hashem. So here we're talking about this love impelling us to engage in Torah and mitzvahs like somebody who is a son striving after their father. And all they want to do is make him happy. It causes us, all we want to do is to make Hashem happy. Since the revelation of this love leads, in fact, to increased performance, he shouldn't be troubled by the fact that he may be deluding himself in thinking that he possesses this love, when actually he does not, particularly since his soul truly does love Hashem. So now, before we approach the next words of the Alter Rebbe, have to review a concept that we learned earlier on in Tanya. We learned it in chapter 16. We visited in chapter 39, also 41. And that is the idea of what the Zohar says, Ayraisa bela dechilu urechimu la parcha la'ela. Torah without fear and love does not ascend above. What does that mean? Love and fear are called wings. And that's what takes the Torah and mitzvahs beyond the confines of this world to a higher space. Any Torah, any mitzvah that is learned in this world is holy, no matter what the intention. The Torah and mitzvah themselves are always holy. The question is, can you see the holiness in it? Well, it depends. Was it dealt with love and fear? If yes, then you can see that this is an act that is all about Hashem. And because you can see it's all about Hashem, it's related to a place higher than this world. And it can become absorbed into the ten sefirot, which are the divine operating force, the life force in each of the worlds, depending on the level of intention in the higher worlds. If there were no intentions of love and fear of Hashem, then it's holy, but it's as holy as physicality gets. It's a physical voice in this physical world, and it stays below in this world. When there is love and fear in the mitzvah, that becomes the animating force in the mitzvah. Just think about our human experience. There's a whole different way you do something when you love someone, when you want to do something, or if a person has no emotions, like you're giving a gift to someone. When you present the gift to somebody that you love, you're excited. There's bounce in your step. There's a smile at your face. Literally, you have pumped animation, life energy into the act that you do. You see a very different act when it's done with someone who has palpable emotions and of love and fear, and someone who is just like, okay, I got to do this. Yeah, it's that time of year and I better give the gardener a gift. Here you go. So if you gave a gift, and it's not, there's no, none of these feelings of love or fear, then truly it wasn't about the other person. It was about you. The Alter Rebbe in chapter 39 says like this: Ain Adam Isa Davar Bishvil Chaveri Lamalis Ritzainai Ella Imkain Ayhavai Ayare Mimenu. A person doesn't do something for his fellow to carry out his friend's will unless he loves him or he fears him. And the key word is for his fellow. He might do something for the other person, and that's what it seems to be. But if he doesn't love him or has no fear of him, then the act that he's doing is really not about his fellow, it's about himself. But if it's truly about the other, if it's other-centered, then there's going to have to be some level of element and fear. And that's exactly what the Alter Rebbe said. The same thing is true with Hashem. Kachi after la asais lishma yisbarech be'emes, lamali ritzani levad, b'li zichrein v'saris ahavasev yirasek klal b'maychai imachashate v'tavlu mesli ba'alkopanim. So too, it is impossible to truly act for Hashem's sake solely in order to carry out his will unless he remembers and arouses his love and fear of Hashem to some degree in his mind, thought, and the latent level of his heart, at least, if he can't arouse these emotions openly in his heart. So we're talking about love and fear pumping soul into the act. When we do an act with love and fear, then this object, which previously was inanimate, has been transformed, metamorphosed into a living being, and now has a life of its own and can fly to a higher world where its true identity is manifest. You can see that this is truly about Hashem. There's two wings. We're talking about love here, but there's also, of course, the wing of fear. And as we discussed at length in chapter 41, the reason why you have to have fear, why it can't just fly with one wing of love, is because if there's no fear, then it's really only about you. If a person only loves but doesn't fear, has no level of respect, then they've never self-transcended, they've never come out of their own space, they haven't taken on any level of humility, and it's only about them. In order for the love to be genuine, there has to be some level of awe or respect, fear. So there's two wings over here. In order for those wings to be functional, in order for those wings to be appended to an act, there has to be the love and the fear. Optimally, the love and fear that are infused in that act are real, live emotions. You thought about Hashem, you feel him in your heart. Out of that space of loving and fearing him, you have done this act. This act is now a lively act. It's a living act. It flies to the higher world. This is lishma, for the sake of Hashem. What if you thought about it and you realize that this is who you are and you really love Hashem, but somehow you can't call the emotions up in your heart? So intellectually, you're completely aligned. Emotionally, no, not really. You're not feeling it. Does that act soar up to the higher worlds? And the Alter Rebbe told us in chapter 16, it does, by a special maneuver on Hashem's part, special operation. What does Hashem do? Hashem takes your good thought, which really is aloof from your act. If somebody does something just simply intellectually, there's no energy in the act. There resonates with them. They're intellectually aligned with it. They're ideologically aligned with it, but the act itself is not jumping. It's not radiating. There's nothing exciting about it. You don't see how it can fly. And really, it can't. The mind is far removed from the act. The heart is very much in it. You see that when a person has love, their limbs, it flows to all their limbs, from the heart to all the limbs. It animates the act. If it's just intellectual, how is the act going to be animated? Really, it can't. So Hashem does something special. He says, you tried. It is lishma. It is for its own sake. You were doing this for Hashem. But there's no connection. It doesn't fuse naturally into this act. So I'm going to do something. I'm going to put wings on it. I'm going to take your thought and I'm going to attach it to the deed. So here we're worried about having this pseudo emotion. We feel it, but we're not sure if it's real. Alter Rebbe says, first of all, it's truest to your deepest space. And even at the moment, it may be an imagined feeling. Hashem does this special operation to allow your mitzvah to fly to the higher world. Ba'al ze amru machshava taiva hakadosh baruch hu mitzarfa lemaisa liyais gadfin lefarcha kenizkar la'el. Concerning this, it was said, a good thought is joined by the Holy One, blessed be he, to a deed, providing it with the wings to soar upward, as explained earlier in chapter 16. A good thought is joined to a deed cannot simply mean that when one thinks about doing a good deed, and then, through no fault of his own, he is unable to do it, Hashem considers it as if he had actually done it. For if this were so, the expression should be, a good thought is considered by God as an actual deed. The Talmud actually has that expression. It starts off with this expression, Machshava Teva, Mitzarfa Lemaise, and then later on in that same passage, the Talmud says, Ma'ala Alav HaKasov Kilu Asa'a. The Torah counts for him as if he actually did it. This is a very curious expression. What does it mean? Joined it to the deed. Rather, the term joined to indicates that the deed was actually done, but the thought and deed were unconnected. And Hashem, in his goodness, therefore, connects the thought and the deed. When a love of Hashem is revealed within one's heart, there is an actual connection between the thought and the deed, for the revealed love adds vitality to the performance of the deed. However, when the love of Hashem is not revealed in one's heart and is limited to one's mind, it is considered to be a good thought that is not connected to the deed. Thus, when one understands that something ought to be done, but he has no love for it, then the deed will be performed without fervor. It is therefore necessary for Hashem to connect the good thought with the deed, thereby ensuring that the good thought, the love and fear of Hashem in his mind, will elevate the Torah and mitzvot which result from it to the world and level of the good thought, to the level of the intention that the person had. And there's the great story of the grandson of Rabbi Akiva Eger. Rabbi Akiva Eger was a famed Talmudic genius and scholar. He wrote important works on the Talmud, very incisive, very intellectually sharp. And his grandson, Reb Leibel Eger, became a Kutzker Chassid. Now, that wouldn't be a problem, except Reb Leibel's father, Reb Shlomo Eger, was an avowed misnagid. He was very much against the Chassidim, and he was perturbed. He was so upset that his son became a Chassid. And he told his father about it. Rabbi Akiva Eger asks his grandson, he says, Leibel, what did you find by the Kutzker Rebbe? Why did you become a Kutzker Chassid? He said, actually, I found an answer to a question that you have in your work, Drush V'Chiddush. And he said, really, what's the question and what's the answer? And he said, Rabbi Akiva brings a question that was raised to him in his work, Drush V'Chiddush, on the Talmud and Rosh Hashanah. There is something called Gezerah D'Rabba, Rabba's decree. That is, that whenever Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, we don't blow the shofar on Shabbos. You know why we don't blow the shofar on Shabbos? In the Beis HaMikdash, they did. But the reason why we don't, we should be allowed to. It's not the problem with blowing. The reason why we don't is because somebody might not know how to blow it, and they might carry it for a mot in a public set, in a public domain, and they'll be carrying on Shabbos. So in order that a person doesn't violate one of the 39 malachas, there's a gezeira d'rabba that you don't carry, that you don't blow shofar on Shabbos, except for in the Beis HaMikdash, they blew the shofar. Now, this is very theoretical because in the Talmud Bavli, the reason why we don't blow the shofar on Shabbos actually is a tradition we have for Moshe, and it's still called Gezeira D'Rabba, but the reason why we don't is Halacha L'Maisha Misinai, so there's no argument about it. The way you look at it in the Talmud Yerushalmi, how Rabbi Akiva Eger quotes it, is we have to wonder why Ben-Azai doesn't object to this Gezeira Derabbah. Okay, because Ben-Azai has an interesting approach. He says, Mahalech ka'aymei dami. Somebody who's walking is considered as if he stands at every step of the walk. So you take one step, it's like you stood. You took another step, and then you stood. It is basically impossible, according to Ben-Azai, to carry 4 amos in the public domain. You will never reach that distance because each step, your step has to be a wide stride of 6 feet in order to actually be carrying. And even Ben-Azai agrees that to the Gezeira Derabbah that you don't blow the shofar on Shabbos, Shema Yavi Renu Dalet Amos B'Shusha Rabbim, maybe you'll carry it 4 amos in B'Shusha Rabbim. And the Taisveis asks this question, and they say the only way this could be is according to Ben-Azai, they would have to jump 4 amos. And then they'll be carrying Rosh Hashanah. And the question is, Davar delay shechicha la gazru be'rabanan. Something that is uncommon, our sages don't make a decree about it. How likely is it that somebody is going to be jumping 4 amos in the public domain? So unlikely. So why would there be, according to Ben-Azai's opinion, why would there be Gezeira Derabbah? And again, I have to emphasize that this is a theoretical discussion because practically speaking, everybody agrees that you cannot blow the shofar on Shabbos because of this idea of carrying. But for the sake of the theoretical discussion, according to Ben-Azai, it is so unlikely that somebody's going to jump 4 amos in the public setting that the decree of Rabbah shouldn't apply because our sages never made a decree for something that is uncommon or unlikely. And then he looked at his grandfather and he said, Grandfather, I learned in Kutsk that it is not uncommon or unlikely for somebody to jump when it comes to doing a mitzvah. Mm-hmm. And his grandfather said, for that, it was worth it that you became a chassid. So here, this idea of having such joy and such love for Hashem, that of course it's not uncommon, it's not out of the question. They'll jump 4 amos because they want to blow the shofar and they don't know how to do it. And they're running. They want to get to the closest person who's going to tell them, how do I blow the shofar on Shabbos? But what if somebody didn't reach that level? What if they don't experience those emotions in their heart? They're only intellectually aligned with it. Or they're intellectually aligned with it, and they're artificially simulating the emotions. They're feeling it in their heart, but they're not sure if it's real. Guess what? Hashem does a certain maneuver. He takes that great intention, or he takes that artificial emotion, which is wonderful because it gets us to do the right thing. It puts our heart in line with our deepest self, and he attaches it, that good thought, to the deed, so it soars above to the location of the original good thought. Here we're talking about, okay, we're bringing Hashem pleasure. We're somebody who's like a son who strives after his father and mother. The Alter Rebbe describes what's this pleasure that Hashem gets when we do a mitzvah, when we study Torah. V'hanachas ruachu kimshal simchas hamelach mibnoi sheba elav b'tzeisim yibes hasurim kanizkar le'el. The gratification he provides Hashem is akin, by way of the illustration used earlier, to the joy of a king whose son returns to him after liberation from captivity. When the soul, Hashem's child, is clothed in the body and the animal soul, it's in a state of captivity. Through Torah and mitzvot, it is liberated from this captivity and is joined with Hashem. This causes him a joy similar to that experienced by the mortal king in the analogy. So our soul comes down here to be within a body and an animal soul. And as we learned in chapter 35, the soul on its own, it doesn't need any rectification. It was perfect before it came down here. Why did Hashem do that? Why did Hashem put a soul in a body? In order to rectify an animal soul, a body, and the world. It came here on a mission. But when it's on this mission, it's in captivity. It's in prison. The soul, the divine soul, it doesn't just think about Hashem. When we're thinking about mundane things, guess who else is thinking about our mundane things? The divine soul too. It's literally dragged into the mundanities of this world. It's in captivity. So, so painful. And every single time we study Torah and we do a mitzvah with abandon, recklessly. We forget about everything of the world in that moment and we're literally just thinking about Hashem. We are, as the Alter Rebbe told us in chapter 41, literally having mesiras nefesh. We're surrendering our soul to Hashem at that time. And it's in a state just like it is when it leaves the body. It's totally united with Hashem. So think about it. The soul is Hashem's child. Yes, he's the one who sent it into captivity. He had a plan. It's called a secret. Sayyid Galas HaShechina, the esoteric secret, the secret of the exile of the Shechina. We don't understand it, but he had a plan. He sent a soul into this world, and it's in captivity. Could you imagine the pain of the king? His son is in prison, in captivity. Could you imagine the joy of the king when his son is released? Guess what? Hashem gets so much joy every time we study Torah and every time we do a mitzvah, because his child is returning to him from captivity. And that's our agenda. I'm a son who strives after his father and mother. I don't have any gratification at all. All I care about is Hashem. What pleasure am I giving him? When I study Torah, when I do a mitzvah, I'm releasing Hashem's child from jail, from captivity. And there's an incredible concept brought up by Rabbi Steinsaltz in the Steinsaltz Tanya. And he talks about that there could be a double exile. This is actually sourced in the words of the Baal Shem Tov. And that is, the child is in captivity, but he doesn't realize that he's in captivity. So there's the analogy of the king who sends his son into exile. And after a while, he wants his son back. So he sends some messengers to his son and he says, ask my son what he wants. And he's hoping that the son is going to say, I want to come back home. I want to be with my father. And the son says, you know what I want? I want a good bottle of wine to have with my meal. So not only is he in captivity, he's in double captivity. He's in captivity. He doesn't realize that he's in captivity. The first level is to realize there's a captivity here. There's exile. Our soul really wants to connect with Hashem. Are we getting in the way, or are we allowing for that? And every time we study Torah and we do a mitzvah, we're bringing Hashem so much pleasure because his child is returning to him from captivity. And there's another level of pleasure that Hashem gets, and it's even beyond that. Or Hashem's gratification may be from the fact that it has been made possible for him to have a habitation among mortals, as already mentioned. And this is an idea that we visited in chapter 36. Why did Hashem make this world? The author brings the words from the Midrash that the reason why Hashem created the world is because he had a desire. He had a desire to have a home in the lowest realms. What does it mean, lowest realms? That's an idea that we grappled with in chapter 36, because there's no higher and lower when it comes to Hashem. But what it means, lowest realms, is the place where he is the least recognized. In that space where it's even possible to deny Hashem. Who dares say, like Paro did, Li ya'ari va'ani asisini, my river is mine and I created myself. Who could say they created themselves? Only a being in this world. Only a being in this world could be in such darkness that they fail to recognize the truth at any level that there's nothing else besides Hashem. And how do we make a home for Hashem? In this space where Hashem is denied, not recognized, we come to recognize him. Personally, we come to recognize him, and then we manifest him by studying Torah and doing a mitzvah. We take the physicality of our body, of the world, we use that to manifest Hashem, to express Hashem. We have created a home for him. That was his dream. Hashem created this world because he had a dream. What's his dream? I want people to recognize me even though they don't naturally. In a place that is hostile to me, I want to have a home. And we are doing just that. Every time we recognize Hashem, every time we study Torah, every time we do a mitzvah, we're making Hashem so happy. That's his dream, and we're fulfilling his dream for him. We're doing this out of this space where we realize something. We have a deep inner realization. Who am I? I am a child of Hashem. What do I want? Nothing more than to bring him pleasure. Wait, I know that's who I am. I'm not feeling it. Okay, step one, let's meditate about it. Let's stop, take some quiet time to ourselves, and really think about the idea that we are Hashem's child. We originate within him, just like a physical child originates within their father. There's a huge difference here. A physical child becomes separate from their father. Us, our soul, never becomes separate from Hashem. So we're truly, truly Hashem's child. He truly, truly is our father. That was step one, sitting with that meditation. Still not feeling it. Okay, use your voice. Start saying it out loud. Hashem is my father. I am his child. I want nothing more than to bring him gratification. Wow, starting to feel something in my heart. I'm feeling these emotions of, I love Hashem. He's my true father. I want nothing more than to bring him pleasure. One second, now I'm stopped. Maybe it's not authentic. I'm feeling something, but I have artificially manufactured that feeling. Okay, don't worry about it. even though it's an artificially manufactured emotion, but it's a reflection of my truest space. I really, really love Hashem. It's hidden deep within my heart. And even if that emotion is artificially manufactured, Hashem does something special with that. He takes that emotion and infuses it within our deed so that it flies way beyond the confines of this world and reaches a place that is suited to our original intention. And what is the pleasure that we bring Hashem? We bring him pleasure by freeing his child from captivity. His child is the soul. It's in captivity in this world. How does it get free? By studying Torah, by doing a mitzvah. It's reunited with Hashem the same way it's reunited with him in Gan Eden. And what's the other level of pleasure we bring Hashem? We have created a home for him in these lowest realms. A place that naturally denies him has come to recognize and express him. That brings Hashem joy, and that's our joy, right? When we're in the space of a child who wants to bring nothing, do nothing else besides bring pleasure to Hashem, that's it. Bingo, we've done it. We've brought him pleasure. We've freed his child from captivity. We have created a home for him in the lowest realms. And next week, Bezus Hashem, we're going to visit how to take this same exercise and apply it to the other level of love that we were talking about. And opening up for question and discussion.